incarnation and purport by the divine grace of Sri Bhakti Vedanta Swami Sri Prabhupada.
Yeah.
The Lord Himself in His incarnation as the son of Satyavrati, Vasudeva, will consider His compilation of the Vedic literature to be very difficult for the less intelligent person with short life, and thus He will divide the tree of Vedic knowledge into different branches according to the circumstances of the particular age. Responsibly. The Lord Himself,
in
His incarnation, as the son of Satyavrati,
Vyasadeva,
will consider His compilation of the Vedic literature.
Will consider His compilation of Vedic literature
to be very difficult.
To be very difficult.
For the less intelligent person.
For the less intelligent person.
With short life.
With short life.
And thus He will divide.
And thus He will divide.
The tree of Vedic literature.
The tree of Vedic knowledge.
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 Into different branches.
Into different branches.
According to the circumstances.
According to the circumstances.
Of the particular age.
Of the particular age.
Report the Srila Prabhupada. Herein, Brahma mentions the future compilation of Srimad Bhagavatam for the short-lived persons of the Kali age. As explained in the first canto, the less intelligent persons of the age of Kali would be not only short-lived, but also perplexed with so many problems of life due to the awkward situation of the godless human society. Advancement of material comforts of the body is activity in the mode of ignorance, according to the laws of material nature. Real advancement of knowledge means the progress of knowledge and self-realization. But in the age of Kali, the less intelligent men mistakenly consider the short lifetime of 100 years, now factually reduced to about 40 or 60 years, to be all in all. They are less intelligent because they have no information of the eternity of the life. They identify with the temporary material body existing for 40 years and consider it the only basic principle of life. Such persons are described as equal to the asses and bulls. But the Lord, as the compassionate Father of all living beings, imparts unto them the vast Vedic knowledge in short treatises like Bhagavad Gita, and for the graduates, the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Puranas and the Mahabharata are also similarly made by Vyasadeva for the different types of men in the modes of material nature. But none of them are independent of the Vedic principles. Magyanatimirandasyajanaganasalakayam chatrus miritam jena tasmai shi gurveen maha shi chaitanya malavistam shabitam jena bhutale sayam upakara maya dadatmita pradatika shi krishna chaitanya prabhuni chananda So Vedic principles, unfortunately, due to pride in their material advancement, economic development, and sense gratification, the people of the current age think that they can make their own principles. Just like the principle is women should be protected. But in this culture, that's considered to be archaic. And now they have devised a modern conception for women that they should be equal in all respects. But the result is that women won't be unhappy, the children will suffer, the men will leave, like Prabhupada said, women liberation means the woman gets pregnant and the man goes away. So they don't understand the principle. This is a principle. Women should be protected. Prabhupada mentions one place how even a woman of very high material qualification, still she can be exploited by Ravana class men. So in the current age there's so many Ravana class men. So therefore the only remedy is to protect them. But as soon as you mention that women should be protected, then they'll think it's some kind of protection racket. And they prefer to be independent. Or the unscrupulous men will encourage them to be independent so they can enjoy them without being responsible. So protecting women is a big responsibility. Therefore, marriage is considered sacred, and the children are actually considered as the property of the husband. And the woman is like the shopkeeper. She's taking care of the goods on behalf of the husband, the goods being the children. Of course, if we mention this, even in ISKCON, it won't be very much appreciated in many quarters, but it's a fact that even the woman is considered in the Vedic principle as the property of the husband. Therefore, the woman goes to the man's house. In the ideal culture, the women are not given independence. They're taken at a certain age to the husband's house, and there they serve. But they're protected. In return for their service, they're given all requirements. Prabhupada specifically says marriage means they have, the wife has to be provided with saris and bangles and sex. So they'll be satisfied in that environment. Elsewhere, Prabhupada says women are prone to sense gratification. Therefore, they should be protected from their own tendency to be self-centered. Everyone is self-centered, especially in Kali Yuga. So men are also, more or less, on the same platform. But Prabhupada was trying to create a class of people who would be God-centered instead of self-centered. And therefore, he's introducing the Vedic principles. Otherwise, why are we interested in Vedic? Why this word Vedic? Why don't we just say Krishna consciousness? No, because Vedic is also important. Just like there's an exchange going now on the Dandavats. The Bhakti Raghava Maharaj is trying to introduce a little bit, step by step, this Varnashram Dhamma that Prabhupada wanted. So he starts on this principle that traditionally women don't go out of the house to earn money. Why is that? Because they'll be seduced. This is their tendency. They're prone to sense gratification. So they'll find a man, a strong man, who's more potent than their husband, and they'll say, well, why am I wasting my time with my husband? I can go with this man. He wants me. And so the family unit will break down. Of course, in the Vedic culture, there was extended family. So, and this is even the modern sociologists have noted this fact that when women went out of the homes, like during the war, World War II, then the women were obliged to go into the factory, and then the habit was there: women could go out, earn money, independent of the man, and because of that, so many problems, so much illicit sex, so much change in the law, like abortion. When I was a young man, and here in America, there, abortion was illegal. But now we're advanced. The high court judges are recommending, yes, a woman can kill the child. There's no problem. It's perfectly legal. So we see from the small point of protecting women, so many sinful activities can come out. Therefore, it's a principle. It's not a detail. Details can be adjusted, like Prabhupada adjusted. Okay, this is the West. We can also allow women to live in the temple. But the principle is no illicit sex. That we can't, adjust. That's established. Principles means that something is standing on. Like we say, religion is standing on four principles: cleanliness, mercy, austerity, truthfulness. And they correspond with the four sinful activities. Illicit sex corresponds with cleanliness. When the women become unclean, they go out of the house, they have sex with other men, then it becomes, the whole religious principles are broken. The family becomes practically non-existent. And the children, even the modern sociologists, psychiatrists, they admit that the children are the ones who suffer when there's so much divorce. Even in today, in India, if you go into the villages, there's no divorce. Maybe 1%. They don't get divorced. Why? Because it's their culture. Because the father, the whole family's involved. Both families are involved. And they invest in it, their reputation and their time to arrange a good husband for the daughter. And so the daughter is thankful to her father. So he wouldn't insult his father, her father, by leaving the husband that the father arranged. I mean, there may be extraordinary circumstance, but then the separation can be there, but no remarriage. So this kind of culture is so far into the West that the Western culture comes into ISKCON. On that exchange I'm explaining, you can read if you like, and Dhanavad Bhagavad's presentation. How many people are immediately getting on the other side? There's been four or five other people who have commented, and they're all against his position, his strict position that, this is that traditional roles for women is the beginning of Varnashram Dharma. I mean, if we're going to introduce it, if we're serious about introducing Varnashram Dharma, this is where we should start. But nobody's interested. So that's all right, because we do have Lord Chaitanya's movement, and everybody can chant Hare Krishna. That was the way Prabhupada preached for years and years. He didn't introduce some kind of Vedic culture very strongly. He said, just chant Hare Krishna and take prasadam. That was the main thing he emphasized. And we can continue like that. We are continuing like that. Chant Hare Krishna, take prasadam. These are our preaching points. But at the end, Prabhupada was advising that if we can introduce Vedic culture, Varnashram Dharma, then more people can be benefited. So it's a gradual process. We don't feel, discouraged because we see what's going on, even in ISKCON. It doesn't discourage us because we understand that this is an age of Kali, and especially here in the Western world, that the people will be strongly against these principles. But we see from our perspective that their principles of being liberally mixing men and women as equals, it simply leads to problems. They run into trouble. I just met a man yesterday, I've known him for a few years, and his wife just left him. He's so brokenhearted because there's no culture to avoid that. Divorce causes so much trouble. Monetarily, the only people who benefit are the lawyers, right? They can make money out of it. Otherwise, everyone suffers. Husband suffers, wife suffers, children especially suffer. Abortion also. Everyone suffers. So many tests have been done. The women who get abortion, they become scarred psychologically. Naturally, they'll be scarred because of the sinful activity of killing their own child. But it's the euphemism is, oh, it's just a lump of flesh, it's not really living, it's not viable, it couldn't live outside the womb, so it's not good. No, this is all just to satisfy sense gratification. People want sense gratification and they don't care for the consequence, so they adjust everything according to that. And the high court judges are also supporting that popular philosophy. But we see that in the Vedic culture, the population are considered more like children. And the king and the rishis were the guides. Praja. The king was the Prajapati. He was the father of the citizens in that sense. So he, just like if we have children in the house, we don't let them dictate to us what they want to do. I want to play with these matches and burn this paper. So, no, we say you can't do that. Prabhupada tells this story of his own. In his own Priyasta Ashram, that is, one daughter, he said she was kind of neurotically attached to making everything clean. And so she was cleaning. And at one point, Prabhupada saw her throwing water into the plug.
The plug is here.
And cleaning inside in the wire. Oh, yeah, yeah. So Prabhupada saw her doing that and he said, "If you do that again, I'll kill you," he told her. He was so strong with her. So we don't let the children just do what they want. So the children, the citizens are more like children. But of course, in the name of democracy, as soon as you mention like that, then everybody will become, "Well, how can you take a superior position? Well, who do you think you are? You're better than me." This is the culture, egalitarian. Everyone is equal. But we come to the point, no, everyone is not equal. Someone is more advanced, someone is equal, someone is less advanced. And we should deal differently with each one of them. And if we don't deal differently, if we're not neutral about our own position, our own adhikari, then we're going to create offense. It's like Ramachandra Puri. He was advising his own spiritual master, Ishwar Puri. I mean, Madhavendra Puri. That Madhavendra Puri, at the last moments of his death, on his deathbed, he was calling out in the mood of Radharani, "Oh, Lord of Mathura, where are you now?" In ecstasy, transcendental ecstasy. But his foolish disciple started preaching to him, "Brahma Bhuta Prasanna Na Sochati Na Kanchi." Why are you lamenting? Why are you hankering? No, you should come to the level of Brahman. So, that's a good philosophy. We can preach that, Brahma Bhuta Prasanna Na Sochati Na Kanchi. But not to someone who's having spiritual ecstasy and separation. So we have to understand, this person is superior. We don't preach to the superior. And we don't show mercy to them. They're superior. But egalitarian, oh no, everyone is equal. What is this? Superior. As soon as you say superior, like Prabhupada was preaching on the principles of four classes of persons, immediately the students became envious. "Oh, you think you're so smart, you're the first class man. Who do you think you are?" Like that. Communist or whatever. Thinking France or something. And Prabhupada immediately said, "No, I'm a fifth class because I'm teaching the fourth class." So Prabhupada was humble, but the principle is there that we should understand. And then the other side would be, "Oh, everyone is equal, so therefore why preach? What you're doing is as good as what I'm doing." The devotees become like that, and they stop preaching. I remember hearing that from a lady. "Oh, there are so many people who are spiritually advanced, not just the devotees. Why do you think you're so special?" She was chastising me for taking a superior position. So that will come. Preaching will stop. Because, everybody has got their own way. That's the Ramakrishna mission, right? Yatama Jatapa. Everyone has their own way. They can do whatever it is that you do, that's okay. But we say no. Prabhupada, when he heard the book was there, "You're okay, I'm okay," he said, "No. I'm okay, you're not okay." So people don't like to take that position. Because you get thrown at. People throw things at you. "Oh, you're so smart. You think you're the teacher, you're the big guru, you're..." No. So why do it? I remember Kartikeya early day, he took sannyas probably. He said, "I hate being a sannyas. Wherever I go, people expect me to talk and they touch my feet and..." But I'm not qualified. And he wasn't, actually. He ended up leaving. So it's responsibility. If you want to take the position of a teacher, then there is a responsibility there. But that's what is being expected of us. Prabhupada expecting us to be teachers. So we have to tolerate that. It's not easy. You get carried away with the flattery. Or you get reactions from their sinful disciples, and they're touching your feet and so on. I once saw Prabhupada in Vrindavan when he was sick in 74, not the last sickness. He was recovering, but he came out, he was sitting on a Vyasasam, and one low class man, in India you can tell low class, high class, and you just look at them, you can see this is a high class man, they have some culture, right? And this was a low class man, simple man, sutra. But he came and wanted to touch Prabhupada's feet, and Prabhupada immediately became, just like fire. "No! He wouldn't let him touch, wouldn't let this man touch his feet. The guy practically jumped back. Because you let people touch your feet, then you get some reaction. You accept it. Some of their karma, some of their... He probably didn't want to. He was sick and he... So, we see also so many big gurus have had trouble because they haven't, you know, accepted that really they're not a guru, that they're simply servant of the servant. And that, in that move, then you'll be protected. Okay, I'll stop here. Any questions? Comments?
I'm going to say a good question, Maharaj. In the Vedic culture, was there, it seems that the leaders of the kings must have had to have some kind of extra abilities, some kind of, I guess Krishna was strong in their hearts to control or to manage, I suppose, the society. You were mentioning the population being mostly akin to children, more in that mood.
One thing is you should realize that they were trained like that from childhood. In other words, they knew that they were going to be king. They were a prince. Like Yudhisthira, he was trained from the very beginning how to be a king. And he was, the advisors and everyone would teach him, like Bhishma was teaching Yudhisthira and the other Pandavas how to, even at the last day, Bhishma was preaching to Yudhisthira when Bhishma was lying on the bed of arrows. What are the duties of the king? So they were steeped in this knowledge and they were trained to fight, to go into the front when there was trouble. Now the leaders, if there's trouble, they go back. They send the others in the front. But the Kshatriyas were expected to go right into the front if there's a problem. So it was training plus, you can say, they also had... to take that kind of birth, they had to be qualified. In other words, to come into the family of that exalted king, it must be that they had good karma from the previous life. The Bhagavad Gita says, those who are pious, they take birth in the righteous families and like that. So they're not ordinary. They're empowered. In some way, the Narada-deva, the ideal king, was empowered by the Lord. But of course, as the Kali Yuga or as the ages progress, then they became degraded. So we read how Krishna had to come and kill the kings. Parashurama had to kill so many Kshatriyas 21 times because they misused their position of authority. So that danger is there. But that's the ideal system, is to have a trained out Krishna conscious king, monarchy. Mm-hmm.
Can I be allowed to say something? Besides Bhakti Raghava Swami, there's also Bhakti Vijayapuna Swami, who's very, very strong about the importance in ISKCON of supporting our spiritual life by underlying Vedic culture, by not dismissing it. And he often in his talks, he goes through the kind of objections that people have. Some people say, well, it's Kali Yuga, what do you expect? Some other people say, well, we're not in India. Maybe the devotees in India or Indian devotees, but we're from, you know, America or Europe, so we don't need. And one of the most famous excuses for not practicing Vedic culture or trying to inculcate Vedic culture is that, well, we're devotees. We're chanting the holy names. We're already getting the whole thing. We're getting the essence. So just on the last objection, he makes a very strong point that, okay, if you're chanting Hare Krishna 24 hours a day, or if you're only doing sadhana and nothing else, you're not worried about eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, you're just only focused on the holy name, then don't worry about Vedic culture, you already got it, no problem. But realistically, how many of us are so focused that we're not engaged in material activities? We can say, theoretically, well, I'm doing everything for Krishna, but psychologically, the reality of our mood and our desires and our needs is we're not, most of us are not on that platform. So as soon as we're engaged in material life, then we have to follow some culture, and that's another point he makes. If you don't follow Vedic, which is the culture that Krishna is giving, then you're going to follow some invented thing. Usually you go along with the way they dress and the way they... You go along with whatever the local culture is. And in Western countries, say in America, it's so degraded that, as Maharaj is pointing out, that the spiritual practice becomes compromised, weakened, vitiated, and contaminated by the wrong values which are implied in the kind of culture that you're living in. So I fully agree. I mean, there's no question that how we present it, and that's very delicate. But at the same time, we have to be strong and don't become confused ourselves of the principle, that the principles of Vedic culture are always universally applicable. And that's why at the end, Prabhupada saw that, and he said, only 50% of my work. And he said, but Prabhupada, we're beyond it. We're devotees. We don't.
Bhakti Vikash Swami also, he acted in that field. He was here recently. And we did a seminar on Alatra. Gauranga Prasad is his disciple. Maybe you can tell us how that went. What was the point he was making?
Traditionalist position was the topic of the seminar, the 3-day seminar.
Traditionalist?
A traditionalist position.
Oh, yes.
Or a platform. He was saying how we are deviating from mainly Prabhupada's teachings. A lot on women's liberation. Also calling Mataji as Prabhus, addressing them as Prabhus was one small topic.
He wasn't in favor of that?
No, he wasn't. Yeah. Dressing, prasadam eating karmi food outside, and music also, the kind of music we listen or play, everything, all the details he was getting. It's there on the website, bvk.com, 3-day seminar is available, 2-hour.
Was it challenging?
Everybody was agreeing. Usually, I thought even he expected some kind of people or some might go against it. One or two here and there, but ultimately they were agreeing.
Neutralized.
Where was it?
Alatra.
It's courage.
Yeah. To the belly of the beast.
Even he was expecting, anticipating. Lot of people.
Well, they just boycott. That's right. Yeah. Even when I walk here sometimes to give a class like this, all the women get up and walk out.
Yes.
Headed by Lakshmi Moon. Yeah. And she got all the girls to.
Oh no.
Yeah, usually there were a few girls, women, and they seem to be okay. One Mataji, Dharma Prabhu's wife.
Dharmatma
Prabhupada.
Yeah.
She wrote on Facebook she wrote on the Facebook page of Maharaj. Then she shared the lecture also with everybody else, and she said, I was surprised Maharaj is named as a woman hater and all that. But in the lecture it didn't seem to be like that. It was so